You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
This podcast is being brought to you by our amazing sponsor, Voyage AC.
Hey, so I'm reading this from Harlow James.
Okay.
It says, Voyage AC Candles. This is a very well-known candle brand, but somewhat new to me. I had heard about their cult following for a while, so I decided it was time to finally test some out. The scents are incredible because they give off a lot without being too overpowering.
And that sounds like a rave review.
It is. And I think it's amazing that Voyage AC gets press like this, and yet this is no candle factory. Mm. Melanie Apple and her team hand pour every single candle. In fact, I spent a little time at their space not too long ago watching how the magic happens.
You did. I saw that video you posted on our Facebook group.
Yeah, it was an incredible day. And remember how good I smelled when I got home?
I do indeed.
Well, you'll want to check out all of Voyage AC's beautiful candles, phenomenal fragrances, and gorgeous face and body products. So, hun, how can our listeners find Voyage AC?
You can find everything on their website at www.voyageac.com. That's VOYAGEETCIE.com.
And as you know, Melanie is willing to give my friends and family discount to all our listeners right now.
What?
Yep, that's 10% off everything you buy.
That's right. All you need to do is enter the only one at checkout.
Right? All you have to do is enter the only one when you make your purchase. Voyage AC is the ultimate luxury blend of travel, design, and scents. Each original fragrance, every candle is handmade, 100% natural vegetable blend, and created by Melanie personally. Voyage AC is an olfactory journey of candles, perfume, and organic beauty products.
I'm Andrea Owen, and I'm the only one in the room encouraging women to make some noise. We have to talk about how patriarchy has played a role in keeping women down. And I don't mean that from like, an F you to the patriarchy. I'm not here to blame like one man. The patriarchy definitely hurts men as well. But, you know, my specialty is women, and it was a topic that I couldn't ignore anymore.
I'm probably one of the few people I know who still looks forward to my Sunday newspaper. Not a digital copy that I read on my phone, but the real finger-staining, loud crinkling, section-by-section newspaper. The Sunday paper for me is a treat to be enjoyed while lounging in bed and sipping hot lemon water. So one day when we were going through all of the Only One stories that are being submitted to us, thank you for those, by the way. We love reading them. It was Scott's idea to record and release a few of them occasionally, but always on Sundays, and call them our Sunday edition. And because they're only 30 minutes long, our hope is that you can enjoy them while sipping your morning beverage, going for a walk, or even just enjoying a lazy Sunday at home. Please enjoy today's Sunday edition, and be sure to listen every Tuesday when we drop another brand new episode of The Only One in the Room. Andrea Owen, hello, beautiful. How are you?
I'm great.
So before we start the interview, I want to ask you, just because I'm curious as an author and a writer myself, What do you think is like the best music to write to?
Anything that doesn't have lyrics, for me.
Oh, okay. Okay. So like what?
There are some Spotify playlists that I love. I actually have an entire folder in Spotify that's just, it's called writing, and it's called like lo-fi beats. There's Focus Flow. There's, and I know because I tell, you know, I don't want to say her name, A-L-E-X-A, to play it. And I have several depending on my mood, but none of them have lyrics. I love music with lyrics, but I have, so my son was diagnosed with sensory processing disorder about 7 or so years ago. And I read a book on it and was crying because I was like, oh my God, this is my life. Mostly auditory. Yeah. So I can't, I have a very hard time sort of processing different sounds that are going on around me. So that's why I can't have words happening, like a conversation or song lyrics, and think about writing words. My brain can't file it away.
I totally understand that. But I really love that you had to spell Alexa so that she wouldn't start talking to you. It's like when we used to spell around our kids, right?
You know, one day Alexa will be able to spell and she'll know that you're trying to get by her.
Right. That's the way it works. She will. She'd be like, bitch, I see what you're doing.
Right.
Trying to get around me.
Don't talk about me like I'm not in the room.
Right?
I heard you. Yeah.
Oh, great. Thank you so much for that. I am Laura Cathcart-Robbins, and this is the Only One in the Room special Sunday edition. But I am never the only one in this room because, as usual, my boyfriend, producer, and co-host Scott Slaughter, who I call Hun, is here as well.
Hi, honey.
Hey, honey. So today we get the pleasure of talking to Andrea Owen again.
I know, so it's dope.
Isn't she great? I just love her. I'm just going to tell you a little bit about Andrea. She is an author. She's a global speaker, a professional certified life coach who helps high-achieving women maximize unshakable confidence and master resilience. She has taught hundreds of thousands of women tools and strategies to be able to empower themselves to live their most kick-ass life through speaking, her books, coaching, and her wildly popular podcast with over 3 million downloads. What? She is the proud author of 2 books, which have been translated into 18 languages. So jealous. And they're available in 22 countries. But her latest book is actually what we're here to talk about today. It is called Make Some Noise, Speak Your Mind, and Own Your Strength. It is out as you're listening to this podcast. It has just come out. What's the date that the book comes out, Andrea?
August 31st, 2021.
August 31st. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's actually not out yet, but it'll be out within the week of you listening to this. So you're going to want to look out for it and also look out for us giving a copy of away on Twitter to our listeners. So tell me, Andrea, how do you identify?
I identify as a woman, a mother, a wife, a person in long-term recovery, an author, and a seeker.
Yes, yes. Very good.
Just off the top
of my head. Thank you for all that.
Yeah.
Also, just for anybody who's listening, if you're having a flashback or deja vu, you are correct. Andrea Owen, you might remember her from our podcast. She was the only one talking about healing from love addiction, episode 84 in season 9. So after you listen to this one, go back and check out that episode because it's beautiful and juicy and it's chock full of stuff that everyone needs to know. So Andrea, I want to start by just talking about the fact that women are told that they're too much or too sensitive. And I actually, gosh, that's so weird. I started to get tears in my eyes when I said that. It's not something, a messaging that I remember getting a lot when I was little, but I know throughout my life, I've been really cautious of stepping over that line and definitely mindful of playing small at times, not just because someone directly told me that, but because the messaging from society was that I could not be, I'm already tall, right? Mm-hmm. So I take up space like this, that I wasn't allowed to take up any more space. So I'm just wondering if you could talk to me about that for a minute.
And it depends on the person. And I mean, I would say maybe 25% or so of women I've talked to about this topic have said they were explicitly told these messages, whether it was at church or just in their family or whether they gathered it from the media, like they were clear that they were valued more if they were polite, if they were accommodating, if they put other people's comfort before their own, if they didn't take up too much space, if they, you know, obviously do not cause a scene, don't rock the boat, like those types of messages. But the majority of us didn't hear those explicitly, but we absorbed it just being out in the world. And we understood it very clearly, even if it was largely unconscious, and then it manifests as not speaking up to our romantic partners when we get older, not raising our hand in class, not asking for a raise at work, not setting boundaries, letting people push us around. I mean, this is where people pleasing comes from. Many times it's where perfectionism comes from. It's where numbing out comes from, because we don't want to be viewed as too emotional, things like that. So I got to the point as a career author where I couldn't in good conscience talk about women's empowerment without talking about this. I mean, you want to talk about the only one in the room, like the elephant is the one in the room where we have to talk about how patriarchy has played a role in keeping women down. And I don't mean that from like, you know, an F you to the patriarchy. I'm not here to blame like one man. The patriarchy definitely hurts men as well, for sure. It hurts everybody. But, you know, my specialty is women, and it was a topic that I couldn't ignore anymore.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I was just thinking while you were talking, my son has dyslexia. He's grown up now, but when he was younger, we looked at a school for kids with learning differences to, you know, give him that confidence boost of being able to learn the way that he could learn. And when we got to the school and toured it, I was like, where are all the girls? Because it was almost all boys. There were like three or four girls. And the director of the school turned to me and she says, girls don't ask for help. Mm-hmm. All these boys raised their hand at some point and said, I can't. And the girls just don't. They're identified so much later in life.
Yeah.
You know, like almost at the point where it's too late because they don't open their mouths. And I was stunned by that. And then it just kind of goes right into what you were saying about not just being polite, but not rocking the boat, you know, keeping yourself small, pretending that you're okay when you're not, so that you're not a bother or you're not a burden to anybody.
Yeah.
We're going to take just a quick break to tell you about a cool new product that Scott and I discovered. And we'll get back to our guest's amazing Only One story in just a minute.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
First of all, I loved your book. I loved it. I love Make Some Noise.
I love that you loved it.
When it comes out, I am definitely, I have 10 people already that I know that I'm purchasing copies for.
Oh my gosh, thank you.
It's a really easy read, and you get right into a couple of your own stories where you have some experience with this. Can you talk about a couple of those when you were younger?
Yeah, and it was interesting. As we're recording this last week, I went to go read the audiobook and at a recording studio, and I had forgotten how many personal, more or less gut-wrenching stories I told in this book. And they're hard to read out loud. And plus, you know, you have to be very, you know, enunciate and articulate. You can't mess up or go off on a tangent. You can't start crying. And
right.
So it was that in the back of my head. And then also reading these really difficult stories. And there was one where, well, I mean, I'll talk about one when I was very young, when I was about 9 or 10. I have this vivid memory of playing outside because that's what we did when we were Gen Xers in the 80s. And so I was sitting on the curb, probably with no shoes on, and a friend of mine was riding her bike in a circle in the street really slow, and she was talking about some other girl that's in our class, and she said, oh, she thinks she's so hot. And I mean, this is long before Megan Thee Stallion was singing Hot Girl Summer. And but when we were kids, to be called that as a girl was an absolutely not. You know, this is like she's conceited, she's self-absorbed, to act all hot. And I remember feeling shame in that moment. I think it's for so many of us, we have memories of shaming moments. And she wasn't even talking about me. But I knew at that moment that that is not how you want to be labeled. You don't want to be seen as that, as confident and assertive. And so it might seem like this innocuous experience, but I think so many of us have these seemingly small things that have happened to us, and this is what shapes us. This is what eventually stems our behavior. And I tell several of them, and I know I'm not the only one who has these stories from childhood and, you know, in high school, and I tell some a little bit more difficult stories that happened in high school and beyond, but this is universal, absolutely.
Yeah. It is, and I'm so glad. That's exactly the one I was thinking of.
Okay, good. I wasn't sure.
Thinking of. Yeah. What do you say to women who are afraid of being judged? I'm stealing this from your book. Like, if you speak up at a meeting and your idea flops, mm-hmm. or you express your emotions and your partner makes fun of you for it.
Right.
That, I mean, that's real fear, right? Because
totally.
That's a really uncomfortable, could be painful place to be, and you're just kind of left hanging out there.
That might happen.
What do you say to women who are afraid of that?
Probably I would put my arm around her and give her a hug, because she has definite reason to fear that, whether it has happened before and she's already experienced it, or it's just one of those like made up stories that could happen. And this is one of those things that's much easier said than done, as a lot of, you know, recovery and personal development is. But we gain self-confidence through actions and experiences and competence and mastery. And so oftentimes we think that I need to gain the self-confidence first, then I will go out and do the things, when it's actually the other way around. And I'm not saying like just fly by the seat of your pants and just go try to be an author or speaker with like zero experience, but you have to start small and speak up for yourself. And so what I tell people is, sometimes perspective is helpful. And what can you control in this situation? You can only control how you show up. And I know for me personally, sometimes I have to slow down and take a step back. And like right now, we're dealing with something really difficult at one of my children's schools. It's a mask thing. Anyway, I won't get into it. Like they don't think the kids should wear masks in the fall. And I'm like, I think they do. And I have a choice, but like, my value system is to be courageous, and I am going to speak up and say something, and I'm going to be thoughtful about it. I'm going to write this letter and be still kind, but well thought out and direct. And I can't control the outcome. They might be dismissive. That's likely that they're going to tell me no. All I can control is how I show up in that moment. And the more prepared I am, the less likely I am going to be to fall apart and start crying. Not that that's bad, but I want to be present when I have this conversation. So I'm taking a very long way to say that just look at what you can control. And is that in alignment with the person that you want to be? So for me, in this example, I want to show up as courageous and responsible for my daughter and protective of my children. That's all I can control.
Yeah.
And that's hard.
you know, that thing about fear being a mile high and a mile wide and paper thin. I don't know if that's always true, but certainly once I've walked through my fears more than once, they become less scary to walk through. You know,
100%.
My perception of how people look at me or judge me or assess me, you know, I care less about that as I walk through things where I do get judged. Mm-hmm. And like you put in your book, where I do have an idea that flops and you mm-hmm. can like hear the silence around and like, oh shit, that wasn't good. But it's not as terrible as I thought it was going to be.
Totally. And that's the thing is, I heard somewhere, and I don't know how true this is, but I'm going to take it as truth, that hard conversations only last between 5 and 15 minutes, but we make up that they're so much bigger and longer than that. And I got asked in an interview one time, how did you become so comfortable with, you know, hard conversations or putting yourself out there? And I started laughing and I said, I'm not. I just know what's on the other side. That's what I try to remember instead of focusing on the problem. And maybe I learned this in the rooms of recovery, you know, like focus on the solution more so than the problem and you're going to get to where you want to go. I focus on the outcome, even if it's not, might not yeah. work out in my favor. That's what's going to build me self-confidence and resilience. And that's what I want.
That's also what I've learned in the rooms of recovery. Mm-hmm. It's so important for me to show up authentic. And my authentic self does want to stand up. I have these values that I don't want to compromise anymore. I'm not willing to. But there's a price for that. And so the choice is, am I willing to pay that price in each of these circumstances that appear in my life? And for me, the risk is too great not to, most of the time. You know, I must stand up. And actually, I was going to tell you, I probably would have just shared this with you, even if I weren't interviewing you, that I spent most of the pandemic rewriting texts and emails after I'd written them out before I sent them, taking out the apology.
Oh,
because I realized how many of them started with, sorry, this is late. Sorry, I blah, blah, blah. Just like, sorry, 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 sorry. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wait, why am I sorry for that? I don't need to be sorry for that. I can just say, here's the blah, blah, blah that you requested instead of giving, you know, a 2-minute apology. And I wanted to just check in with you and see if you had any thoughts about that.
I have so many. And it's funny, I've had lengthy conversations with our mutual friend, Sarah Dean, about this particular topic.
Yes.
Partly because I'm on TikTok a lot. And there was this whole thing going on TikTok about, you know, write your emails more like Chad. And Chad is just this persona, you know, of an entitled white man who does not apologize or use exclamation marks. And it's all in fun. And then I was on an email chain with my husband for school or something. And he replied all. And I couldn't believe how short his email was, and it wasn't rude. And so he and I were talking about it and just, you know, how different our emails look. And all that to say is that this is our socialization and our conditioning.
Yes.
Like it is
yes.
difficult for me, even as, you know, I'm 4.5 decades in. Like so I've been doing this for a long time, and still, even to my team, I still do that. And what I have tried to do to remedy that, without going too much into the why, I think it's kind of obvious why we do it. But mm-hmm. you can, so say it does warrant, like maybe I did take a long time to answer an email. I try right. to say, instead of, I'm sorry for the delay, thank you for your patience.
Yes. Yes. I think you taught me that, Andrea.
Did I?
I think so, yes, because I've started using that. I was wondering who taught me that.
I don't do it all the time. I miss sometimes, and I will just reflex, you know, just apologize.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's not just the words. It's also just my body. Like, mm-hmm. I'll apologize with my body language, too, and my tone. And I can see it sometimes as I'm doing it, and I'm like, stop.
Yeah.
Stop. I don't need to.
And don't you feel it's such a different energy than when you are truly apologizing for something, like when you have
yes.
harmed like Scott or something and you have to come and make amends? Very different yeah. energy.
Well, and I got to tell you, I learned a lot from Scott too. Scott's a great apologizer. He's super thoughtful. He never qualifies it with an if. He says, this happened. It was hurtful to you. I take responsibility and my apologies for that. And it
That's
leaves no room.
I learned that in program too.
Yeah, you did learn that in program.
Yeah. But I also, I mean, as a man, I mean, I think these conversations are equally as important for men, for a lot of men, because we're shamed if we bring it up. We're shamed if we feel the way you feel. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I try to eliminate the word apology because I'm ready to correct the behavior. I think I used apology for way too long because it just allowed me to not understand what I was apologizing for, just to try to make the situation better in the moment. But thank you for that, honey. I appreciate that.
It's true. I've learned a lot from the way that you've come to me, and I've seen you come to others with that. I want to talk about, and I want to make sure we have time to talk about it, because it's my favorite chapter of your book. It's called Remember Your Built-In Wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's my favorite chapter. You know, I could switch to another chapter later on. That happens to me all the time, too. Because you know how certain things are appropriate at different times in your life, right?
Yeah, I had no idea what you were going to say.
Yeah. But remember your built-in wisdom. You're in a very dangerous situation and you ignore your intuition more than once. I wanted you to tell us about that so they can understand what was going on. And then I want to talk about how we unlearn how to do that. Do you know what I mean?
Because
each of your chapters ends with like an unlearning lesson, which is great. But just how much of a disservice we do to ourselves, especially as women and Scott, of ignoring our intuition, you know, because we've been told that maybe it's faulty or it's not as reliable as other people's information. I don't know which order you want to do it, if you want to talk about that first and then tell the story, or tell the story and then talk about that.
Let me tell the story first.
Okay.
And I should probably preface it by saying when this happened, I was very deep in my codependence and love addiction. My drinking hadn't picked up quite yet, only because I didn't need it yet. I was very much addicted to codependent behavior and relationships and men. So I was in a relationship with someone. My marriage had just ended, and it was awful. It was dramatic and traumatic the way that it ended. And then I immediately started a relationship with someone who was an addict, and I didn't know it. But I think subconsciously I did, because us codependents, we love our addicts. And for anyone who understands the attachment styles, I'm very much the anxious. I think probably all love addicts are. And so this particular person, I thought that he had terminal cancer. And I was living in San Diego at the time, and we were going down to Tijuana, Mexico, because you can get a lot of medication in Mexico at legitimate pharmacies, but without a prescription that you can't get in the United States. So he had terminal cancer. We were going down there to get his medication. And one night he was very sick, I thought was from cancer. And he's like, well, I need to go down there to get this medication. And it was late and I knew all the pharmacies were going to be closed, but I went with him anyway. And we were walking down this back alley and he saw two men standing there outside of a building. And he said, stay here. And he walked over to them and he whispered, but I could still hear him. And he said, hey, do you guys know where I can get any oxy?
Mm.
And my stomach sank, but it was sort of, you know, telling me something I already was suspicious of, but just didn't want to know. And so we walk down the street and he gets a cab and he opens the back door of the cab, you know, for me to get in. And I said, I don't want to go, you know. And for those that don't know, like Tijuana, Mexico can be a dangerous city. And it was nighttime. And I was also with someone that I didn't inherently trust. And he took my face in his hands and he, you know, pulled my chin up and said, I would never do anything to jeopardize your safety. And I got in the car and everything in my body was saying, get out, like go cross the border, go home and break up with him. But I didn't, because I was, I mean, just generally speaking, so codependent. I didn't want to hurt his feelings. I didn't want to face the truth of what was really happening. I was so ashamed of where I was at. I was 31 at the time. All my friends were getting married and having kids, and my life was just a mess. And it was just deep in my addiction thinking and, you know, active. It was a mess. But I tell this story because I knew I was ignoring my intuition. Mm-hmm. And looking back on it, many times I feel that we do that is because our other choice is to do something so incredibly difficult, to leave a relationship, to walk away from a job that isn't serving us, that might be paying us well, to get sober. Like, these are extremely difficult lines that we need to cross. And I think many times this is why we ignore our intuition. And the more we ignore it, the more we abandon ourselves. And I want to just say, like, as kind of a side note and to answer the second part of this question, is one thing I talked about in this chapter, which I had not talked about before, was that people who have experienced trauma, whether that was in childhood or adulthood, sometimes have a very difficult time trusting and listening to their intuition because they've experienced gaslighting where they've been told your reality is wrong. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, they grew up in a family where they knew something was wrong, but nobody talked about it. So, you know, your reality is being dismissed. And I just wanted to say that because it's a very real thing. And I think sometimes we hear like, oh, just trust your gut. Like, and but some people don't know, they can't. And also really quick, it turns out that my boyfriend did not have cancer at all. He right. was lying about it the whole time to cover up his addiction. And then I actually wrote an article for a website about it years later. And I could not believe how many people said that they had either heard a similar story or experienced it with addicts. I had never been with an addict before. Like, I'm like, is this just like normal behavior? Anyway, I can laugh about it now. I wasn't laughing about it then.
I'm sure.
But yeah, that's my whole thing about intuition.
Well, first of all, Scott and I have someone in our lives who did the exact same thing. This is a young woman, and we went to great lengths to be of service to her, and we were fooled by her. I really wanted to make sure we had enough time to talk about this because I think it can't be underscored enough that women are taught to undermine their own intuition, mm-hmm. to second guess it, that somebody might know better, double check that. And certainly there are certain things that should be double checked.
Sure.
Or fact checked. But when your gut is telling you no, when your intuition is, you know, putting on the brakes, it is something to listen to, you know, especially as women. And, you know, I know that Gabrielle Union talked about years and years ago before she was an actress working at a convenience store and was there by herself and someone came in and gave her a bad vibe and she was scared to say, I need you to leave because she didn't want to look crazy.
Yeah,
to this person, and they ended up assaulting her. Mm-hmm. So, you know, she went around telling people to listen to their intuition. And I try to recall that. I'm going to recall your story every time I'm tempted to doubt mine. Mm-hmm. My intuition is really, it's a pure source. I can take information from and use it to keep myself whole and well, different than my instincts. And it took me a while to make that distinction, but
I'm curious about that. How do you describe the distinction?
The instincts for me are like, you know, a ball comes at my head. There's an instinct to protect myself.
Sure.
And some of those instincts were put in me or installed to protect myself from situations that are no longer my reality.
Right.
So when Scott and I get into, actually, we don't need to get into anything. When I feel slighted by him, my instinct is to shut down. Mm-hmm. That's what protects me. That's what protected me when I was a little girl from my stepfather. It's not my intuition telling me to shut down.
I see the difference.
Beautiful man out.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting subject because I think it's very confusing. And, you know, I think the instincts are what we learn. And very much like if you get gaslit from the time you're 7 years old to the time you're an adult, you think it's your intuition. You forget that your intuition is that guiding force, that truth that you know to be the action you need to take, but you don't rely on it because you don't have a lot of experience with it. And relearning that, I think, is what Laura's talking about and you're talking about, is re-accessing that intuitive, deep truth that we all have. We come into this world with, I think, and dropping those instinctual things that we've learned to protect ourselves, you know.
For everyone who's listening, these are the kind of conversations that you'll get to have in your circles when you have a book club that reads this book, Make Some Noise. It's called Make Some Noise, Speak Your Mind and Your Own Strength, and it's out in August. So right now, it is mid-August, and you're going to be able to pick this book up on August 31st. Is it available for pre-order, Andrea?
Yes, it is, on audio, ebook, and print. It helps authors very much to pre-order because there's no other metric that book retailers have to look at. So that's why authors push pre-orders. I always like to be really transparent and tell people, like, this is why we talk about it so much, because it's the only metric.
It's really important. But aside from that, it's delicious. You're going to dive in and pull out all these things that you're actually going to use in your real life in real time right away and inspire some really amazing, beautiful, thought-provoking conversations. And, you know, you might want to be tempted to go out and make some noise after you read it, which I hope you are. And like I said, we're going to be giving away a copy to our listeners on Twitter. So please look out for that in our Facebook group. And we have 2 minutes left, hon. because I wanted to see if you would end with Burn It Down, your poem.
You ready? Burn it down. She had fire in her belly and she used it to summon her truth. She had fire in her soul and she used it to remember where she came from. She had fire in her heart and she used it to trust the women who came before her. She had fire in her spirit and she used it to show other women their own flames. She had fire in her eyes and she used it to burn it all down. She had fire in her every being and she used it to blaze a new path, a new way, a new life.
Hmm.
Thank you.
Oh, snapping. Yeah, that's right.
I was thinking it was a snap thing. But...
it's a snapping thing. Mm-hmm. Andrea, thank you so, so much. You are a pleasure. We're going to do this for the rest of our lives, you and I.
I hope so.
We're just going to have each other on our shows whenever anything comes up. Yes.
Hobbies include talking to Laura.
Yes.
Beautiful.
And beautiful. Scott. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you for listening to The Only One in the Room. Please join us each Tuesday and Sunday for an incredible brand new Only One interview. And every Friday for On My Nightstand, where I'll be reading something that I love. If you have an Only One story you'd like to share, or a piece of writing you'd like to submit, please send it to theonlyonepod@gmail.com. From all of us at The Only One in the Room, we wish you dopeness, health, and prosperity.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season two even more memorable together.